Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
To bringing design closer. Our goal is to have conversations that inspire and help move the dial forward for organizations to become more human-centered in their approach to solving complex business and societal problems. Now, before we jump in, I have a small favor to ask. I've been creating content for this SHCD for over 5 years or so, all for the love of sharing knowledge to the global design community. One thing you could do is leave a review for us, preferably a 5-star one, as it helps grow our community and every little helps. And even if you don't review, go one better by telling the people that you work with about the podcast. It really makes a difference. We launched a space on thisishcd.com where you can take courses now in visualization, design research and more. So please check it out and support the show. In this episode, I speak with Mark Fontaine of The Service Design Show. Now, I appeared many years ago on Mark's own show and we've been chatting ever since. And I caught up with Mark recently to hear about what he's been working on and also about selling service design. We even do a fun role play activity where I get to play the boss or decision maker in a business. It's a good one. I think you're going to enjoy it. Let's jump straight in. Mark Fontaine, I'm delighted to welcome you finally to this.
Thanks for having me on. Yeah.
Long time admirer. I've been on the Service Design Show. We were just talking about 4.5 years ago and how it happens to be 4.5 years later that we speak next time is kind of beyond me, but I'm delighted to finally welcome you onto the podcast.
Officially. Yeah, officially. We've been in touch in the meantime, but you've been on the Service Design Show. Did you have a look at which episode number it was? Because I don't recall.
I think it was probably 15 or 20 or something. I think it was.
Imagine that. By the time that we're publishing this, it's probably around 160. So
really?
Wow. Yeah.
It's crazy. We were just recounting where we were at that time. It was 2018.
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that, and how much the world has changed. But yet, how much of it has still remained the same. And I'm going to hopefully chat to you a little bit more around service design in particular, and also some of the work that you've been doing over the last 4.5 years, because you've been busy.
I have. Yeah, for sure. And I'd love to share.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Mark, when you're out and about and you meet people, say, at your kids' playground and stuff, and they say, hey, Mark, what do you do? Well, how do you answer that question?
That's a classic one. And I would say I'm still discovering and figuring it out. But these days, I position it as I'm somebody who helps service design professionals do a better job, be more effective, impactful. And the way I do this is by publishing helpful content, by educating people, by coaching people. That's how I'm describing it these days. But I had a conversation with myself this morning, and I could just as easily sort of frame the things I'm doing as being a publisher, a media company. So it depends. It depends on who's standing in front of me.
Yeah, absolutely. We were talking about that beforehand, like the kind of the position and the framing that we put on our own self, and how you can actually see that, you know, journalist or media publisher, or, you know, content creator, or as a word that I've learned recently, a contrapreneur, content creator with Abby Abdal on YouTube is a great way of framing things. Like, you know, but I want to ask you, why service design? Like, where did this come from? And for anyone listening who may not know what service design is, maybe chat about that.
Sure. Yeah. Why service design? It depends on how far we want to go back. But let me try to give you a 2-minute backstory, and then you can ask for more context. But I'm not a trained designer by any means. I'm a software engineer by trade. I learned how to build software. And then right after going out of university, I started my own company building mobile apps before the iPhone was out. So it wasn't really an ecosystem there. But really quickly, I learned that I got bored building software. And the reason I got bored is that once you figure out how to solve one challenge using software, you'll get pretty confident that you can actually solve the next one. The real challenge that I saw was that nobody was using the stuff I was making. And it was really frustrating. And I was more and more getting interested in learning how I can build meaningful stuff. And then through sheer coincidence, I got introduced to the concept of service design, and I met the co-founder of the studio that I founded later in the Netherlands called 31 Volts, a traditional product designer. And he introduced me to the design concept, what it is. And I had the notion of design that I think most people still have, like it's the creative aspect. I wasn't the creative, I was an engineer. Mm-hmm. But I learned that a lot of things that I learned through engineering are applicable in design, are part of design. It's just a matter of shifting your perspective that you're taking a human-centered first approach. To wrap this story up, why service design? Back then, when I got introduced to service design around 2006, we Googled service design Netherlands. I'm based in the Netherlands. Back then, you could get 0 hits on Google, and we got 0 hits. I'm not saying that nobody was doing service design in the Netherlands, but weren't using that term. Yeah. We figured like 80% of our economy is made out of services. Why aren't design professionals thinking and contributing to developing, designing better experiences? And that was curious to us, and we thought, like, let's just put it out there and see what happens. And then sort of the rest is history.
I noticed, like you mentioned, more around human centeredness, and what do you feel is lacking in the service design discipline as regards human centeredness?
Oh wow. That's a good question. What's lacking in the service design space? One thing that immediately pops to my mind, and that's something that I've been sort of preaching for the last at least 5 years, is business awareness. So I think service design people are a very passionate and dedicated bunch of folks, very empathetic and very passion driven. We want to do good for people, and we do everything we can to understand who we're designing for. But I don't know how it happened, but we tend to forget that we're also working with people. So the people around us inside an organization or with a client, somehow there is a blind spot that we're not doing as much as we can to actually understand their needs, the needs of our coworkers, the needs of the business stakeholders. And I think that's slowly changing for the good. But if you ask me what's missing, I would say even more awareness around that aspect.
And do you think that lack of awareness is driven by the industry, or is it driven by the mindset of the practice?
I think it's driven by the sort of education and the stories that get shared. The stories that get shared focus on tools, methodologies, like you see all those frameworks, models coming by, canvases, and that's the thing that gets the attention. That's like the shiny stuff. What you don't see is actually all the backstage stuff, if we want to stay in service design terms. Like you see the workshop, you see the field research, but you don't see that you have to sort of convince your manager to get time to actually do field research. Or how do you convince the other department to join your ideation workshop. Like, that's the hard stuff. Yeah.
And that's the stuff that can have a real long-lasting impact on the health and the well-being of the practitioner. It's not like at the end of the day, you know, the person doesn't walk home remunerated with an extra double salary for convincing their boss to give extra time to do research that they should be doing anyway. So if they don't get that, I know from experience and also from working with other designers, that can be very draining and can be trauma-inducing.
Oh, man, absolutely. And I'm happy that you sort of touch upon this because as in practice, as an industry, as a field, we have to set the right expectations. So people getting into this field, what are they seeing? And right now, they're seeing people doing awesome stuff. It looks fun. It looks exciting. Like, who wouldn't want to have a purposeful day-to-day job?
Yeah.
But when you get into an organization, get to work with a client, and you sort of have a look behind the curtain, and you see all the stakeholder management, all this politics that nobody told you about, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what you don't hear at conferences.
No.
That's what you don't read in the service design books. But that is the day-to-day reality. Like, you get discouraged, you get frustrated, you get disappointed. And that's not what we want. We need more people designing better service experiences, not less. So
yeah,
I don't want to, again, discourage people here listening to this, but it's good to be aware and get yourself prepared for this because that's doable. Yeah.
I mean, it's very often that you might hear of business leaders coming to service design conferences or being presented with the discipline and getting excited because they're like, okay, cool, this holistic approach to providing, you know, a sort of a framework that we can work towards. It usually goes in one direction, and that is, you know, making more money, speed, all these different things, and they come at a cost, and there's a collateral cost to the human impact, as you said there about the employee and your co-workers and stuff like that. In your experience, because I know you're doing an awful lot of work in selling service design, how do you recommend that people approach those conversations so it's not just all about speed and making money, and reframe it into more of an ethical approach to designing services?
A short answer is ask more questions. Listen, if anything, like if you take anything away, that's the short approach. So I wouldn't know. If you're in a for-profit organization, like, making money is just the game that you're playing, and speed is important. So I don't think those are bad things per se and are contradicting to being ethical and doing good for the world. I think it's the job of the professional, the service design professional, to connect those things to the work you're doing. If you're not able to connect the dots and show how you're contributing to what the organization finds important and show how it's contributing, then you're probably not doing a very good job. And I think it's not that hard to show that doing good for people, employees, customers, in the end, is good for business. Like, it's not that hard.
Mm. So when you say ask more questions, I mean, and I'm not being kind of flippant when I say this, like, you know, can you give me a little bit more depth in terms of what that looks like?
Sure. We can try at least. See how
far
we get.
I want to do a bit of a role play. We could do a bit of a role play even in this, like, you know. So.
Oh, you're putting me on the spot here.
No. Oh, are you comfortable enough to do this?
I'm comfortable with anything. So let's see.
Sound like a true Dutch person. So let's say I'll be the boss, okay, and you be the service designer, and the boss is someone who has never heard of service design.
Sure. Yeah. All right. Sounds good.
Let's go. I'm at my computer. You walk up to my desk.
And then what happens?
Hey, Mark, how's it going?
Hey, Jerry. I'm doing well. Exciting day.
That's good. Can I help you?
I'm not sure. I heard from Jeff that you were interested in talking about creating value for our customers. Is that right?
I'm always trying to create value for the customers.
Awesome.
What's the angle?
Well, I'm curious if you can share a little bit more about where that is coming from, like what set you on the track of creating value for customers, and what are your thoughts about that right now?
Well, at the moment, we're trying to reduce the price of the service so we can make it more accessible to people and make it a bit more affordable to people, because at the moment, you know, money's tight for large parts of the world and we need to reduce our costs.
That makes makes a lot of sense. And I think that's a good direction if we can support more customers and serve more customers with our service. I'm curious, is anything holding you back from actually lowering the price right now? Are there any barriers to achieving this?
Well, we can't get a hold of good people to work within the office at the moment. Everyone wants to work remotely. And we're finding it very hard because we haven't been able to replace some of our team. And we're going to have to hire a consultancy to take over that role. And it's going to be twice as expensive for us.
So the struggle is finding good talent right now.
Yeah. And this is not where you promote servicedesignjobs.com.
Not really. Well, I could. But I'll pause here for a second, because it could be very tempting to continue this conversation in the direction and sort of try to sell you on service design. But at this stage, I would even question, like, is this, should we be having this conversation? Is this a conversation that you need to be having? Sounds like an HR challenge, not a service design challenge. That still might be something that could, where service design could play a role and think about employee experience. But the reason I want to sort of pause here is that this is the pitfall or trap that I see a lot of professionals walk into.
Yeah.
Trying to sell you on service design. I don't know if you need service design, right? The answer could be, you're not my client. You're not the person who needs service design. You need to talk to HR, right? And I don't know, do something there. So,
and that's really...
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I'm a huge believer in this, because people say to me, like, we want to try and, you know, get service design in everywhere. And I'm like, well, maybe they don't need service design. Maybe it's something that they don't really have an interest in, or maybe they don't even need, because, you know what, they're doing pretty okay on their own, like, you know?
Absolutely. And this is sort of where I think I have flipped the conversation in my mind a few years ago. This isn't for everyone, and selling isn't about me convincing you that you need this. When I sell, the only thing I want to do is help you achieve the goal that you already have. And for that, I need to know, what is your goal? What are your struggles? And do those struggles align with the skills that I can provide? Like, if that's not the case, the best thing I can do is sort of advise you to talk with Jeff or somebody else in the organization. And then selling becomes so easy. Like, you just need to find the right the person with the right problem.
I mean, if you're a practitioner, and this is a big thing that I see in my coaching, is people who are working maybe, say, in user experience design or BA or business design, and they've heard of service design and they want to do it, and they go to their boss and they're trying to sell it in because they basically want to make a new role for themselves and to practice service design because they think service design would be really good in the organization. And usually, if that opportunity exists, I always recommend that they start right where they're at. Like, you know, there's a good opportunity there. But from Jeff's perspective, and I don't know what my name was in the role play.
Jerry.
Jerry, probably. it's hard to sell it in when there's not a fit. In fact, I'd probably say it's impossible.
It's a recipe for disaster. Because if you, like, I'm not even selling you on service design. I'm selling you on a solution to a challenge that you have. Like, we can call it user experience design. We can call it whatever we want. You have a problem, a business challenge, a customer challenge. That's what I want to help you with. And if you're interested, like if you're a service design geek as me, I can tell you all about service design. But in general, I would hold back on using those terms with people who aren't interested in design. They don't care. Yeah. And that's okay. Like, that's totally fine.
I know. I remember Mark, the other Mark Stichter.
The legendary Mark.
he is a great tweet that he wrote. And that's not saying Mark creates tweets all the time that are great, but he has a really good one about where someone says, hey, what's the difference between design thinking, CX, user experience, human-centered design, service design? And his response is like, I don't know. Is there one? I think it's something along that. There is none. Simple. It's really down to the language that's been used in the internal organization and how they're actually delivering value.
So, yeah, I can second that to follow all tweets of Mark. But adding to this is what helped me to frame this mindset is imagine that you're traveling to a distant country. Let's say I'm going on holiday to Japan, which might be a difficult example, but let's follow along for a second. When I want to get recommendations where to eat, best thing I can do is talk to the locals. And when I approach locals and greet them in their native language and just have a few words in their language, the chances of me getting a better recommendation like skyrocket. And the reason I'm using this example is imagine that you're a service design professional, a customer experience professional, and you start talking with business stakeholders. You're sort of taking a holiday somewhere else in a foreign country.
Yeah.
Imagine what it does when you're able to sort of use a few words that are common to them, where they are comfortable with, that already sets a completely different tone. Rather than me coming in, speaking in Dutch and trying to get a food recommendation, right? When we travel, we adopt, we sort of learn about the culture. At least I try. We should be doing the same inside our organizations.
Yeah, absolutely. The shared language. And I think user experience designers from before kind of it became like a mishmash of product design and all this other stuff, the old guard of user experience design, when they were kind of at the forefront of bringing user experience into businesses, they did a really good job at that. They, you know, about the needs and how it intersected with agile and how they delivered value and made it easy and so forth for the people to use the interfaces and stuff. And I think service design as a practice is at that point where it kind of realizes that from the business perspective, they've already gone through this, but potentially with bringing user experience in. And now there's another thing that's coming in as well. And what's going to happen in 5 years and 10 years? Is there going to be another thing where it's going to be server user experience, human-centered design type design? What does it look like? And what do you think?
Oh, I have a very simple model that I use that helps me to make sense of the world and all out of all these design disciplines. There is a classic book called The Experience Economy by Joe Pine and Gilmore. I forgot the first name. And there is a model in there which describes a progression of economic value, how commodities turn into goods, how goods turn into products, how products turn into services, and then eventually into experiences and transformations. When I think about how design is evolving, I use that model all the time because the progression of economic value is how organizations work. And for me, services like are just what companies do, providing a service. And then some organizations provide an experience. That's the thing that you're designing. So social design, human-centered design, all those other design disciplines that are out there right now, I get it. Sometimes it's good to sort of articulate a specific aspect like life-centered design. But I always for myself come back to this model of progression of economic value. What are businesses selling? What are they delivering? A product, a service, a good, an experience. That's the thing they will want to design. And that's why service design as a practice, as a field, which I think is a way better way to sort of describe it, it will be around for the next 20, 30, 50 years.
Yeah. It's really important, though, like, if it's going to be around for the next 20 or 30 years, that we think about, as you said, the health and the well-being of the people who are actually practicing the craft so they don't burn out. And I know you're working on a number of things at the moment that can help support that. Do you want to tell me a little bit more about this?
What a great transition, Jerry.
I need to get some sound effects. We'll do a little... There you go. Next segment.
Yeah, thank you. That sets the stage. And yeah, so I can talk about one thing that is very dear to my heart and is about mental well-being of service design professionals. It started out with something which was called the campfire. And the idea of the campfire was like literally a campfire, but then virtually. This started just before the pandemic. And I heard the need from members of the community to basically share struggles with each other. These were people who were inside an organization that sort of heard about service design, hired their first service designer, and then these people were tasked to, okay, bring it on. You're the expert. Show us how to do it. And they stumbled and failed and were lonely. That's basically what was happening. And I was hearing these stories over and over. And in true design approach fashion, I felt like, let's do something. Let's prototype something. So created the campfire, which was a 6-week series of bringing 8 in-house service design professionals together. And on a weekly basis, somebody would share, what are you working on? What are your struggles? What are your challenges? And the rest of the group would just listen, take notes, and then sort of be a mirror. And basing on the responses from these participants, it was transformational for them. Like, just having a community of like-minded people who understand you, that was transformational. So the campfire eventually evolved, but let me give you a moment to sort of interact here.
No, I'm just saying, like, that gives them a chance to be heard and to feel like they're part of an externalized tribe. And you're leveraging, I guess, the internet to bring that interconnectedness together. Like, and it's very powerful. But why do you think they need an external thing? Why can't this be brought in-house? And if so, well, what are the benefits of having it as an external thing?
So I definitely do think that this can be brought in-house. And I know some companies do have this, like they have their internal design or UX design guild or tribe or community. But it's just a matter of scale. The people who joined the campfire, which now turned into the circle, service design wasn't mature. Design isn't mature in those organizations yet. So the scale isn't there. And therefore, you need to go looking for these people somewhere else.
Yeah. And if you're working on your own as a service designer in an organization, which tends to be the case at the very start of, you know, kind of the movement, if you want, having access to people who are going through the same stuff and maybe have gone through it before many times is hugely powerful, because you can ask them questions and help keep them safe and so forth.
I would even, again, basing on what I'm seeing in these communities, it's transformational. Like, people literally feel lonely, and that changes when they are surrounded and feel that they can reach out to people who are in the same situation. Like, I don't know if that isn't the only solution to mental well-being, but it's definitely a big contribution to making sure that you stay sane and can put things into perspective.
So what does it look like then? So walk me through what, I don't want to call it a program, because you gave me a virtual slap and I said that was before. What does it look like from an experience perspective? When can people just buy a ticket, or how does it work?
Yeah. So like I mentioned, the campfire evolved into what now is called the Circle community. And the Circle community has a very simple concept. We get together on a monthly basis for 2 hours where we explore a topic that is relevant to this community. So right now it's about 17 to 20 in-house service design professionals. And the topics are facilitated by one or two of these members. And we talk about how to measure services, how to gain influence, how to incorporate circular design. And you join for 2 hours, you listen, you share your own story, you hear perspective from others. And I would almost say that's it. That's not entirely true because we're doing stuff outside of this 2 hour session, but that 2 hour session, that dedicated time, that focus time is like the bread and butter of this community.
Okay. And so is it a 6 weeks? Is it? You said over 6 weeks?
No. So the Circle is an ongoing thing. Okay. It's you become a member of this community, and we have a program for the coming months of topics that we'll be addressing.
Okay. It is a community in that sense.
It is a community. Yes. It's. I think on the website,
servicedesignshow.com/circle.
Yeah, I didn't want to make it too complicated. I think I framed it as a professional learning community. Okay. Cool. So to get back to your point, it started out as a campfire, which was a 6 week thing, but we really quickly noticed that 6 weeks wasn't enough. Like, you're not done after that. You still don't have other people inside your organization around to have a chat with. So people want an ongoing thing, and that's why this is now an ongoing thing.
Okay. Do you mind talking about how much it costs for people listening? And I'll put a link to it in the show notes, because it sounds like people listening will definitely be interested in this. I'd just love to know, like, to share that, to save people the click. And
yeah, sure. So the membership fee right now is $50 or 50 euros nowadays. If you join on a personal membership, it's per month. And then it's 100 if you're boss pays. That's probably going to change in 2023. But for now, those are the current membership prices.
And so they get access to, is it a monthly event?
Yeah. So the monthly event, that's one of the things you get access to. What you don't get access to, and that is what I sort of specifically want to address, is we don't have a centralized way of communicating with the other team members, community members outside of these sessions. So that's by design. And I posted something on that on LinkedIn. There is no Slack channel. There is no Facebook group. There is no LinkedIn group. There is no WhatsApp group. Like, on purpose, I didn't want to introduce another channel, which you have to pay attention to. And yeah. I think it's really hard to hold on to that, because I feel a lot of external pressure to still introduce that. But I'm trying to keep that away as long as I can.
Yeah. Which is crazy that we've come together, because yesterday I just killed off the This Is HCD Slack for that very reason. I had a great conversation with Jerry McGovern, one of my good friends in Dublin there about 2 weeks ago. And his whole theory of it's another thing, it's another channel, it's another fluid river that people need to keep their eye on in case they miss something. He's like, people don't need this stuff anymore. It's not like it's the news where current affairs are going to affect people's lives. Like, if you can provide that and be controlled with an intent behind it and the rationale, I'm a huge believer in this now. So it's great to hear that that's something that you're echoing as well.
Yeah. And for me, it was, I want to foster deeper connections, deeper conversations. So rather than, and Slack and all those kind of things have their place, but it's often more superficial. It's quicker. That's not the type of conversations and connections, relationships that I want to help foster. Like, if you join the Circle, you go in for 2 hours, you dedicate 2 hours of your time in a month. Like, what are we talking about? Like, 2 hours for personal growth and development, that's nothing. But I'd rather have you spend those 2 hours focused and sort of scattered around on a daily basis. And the signal to noise ratio is like, it's exponentially bigger when you focus for 2 hours rather than reading
scattered
1,000 messages that aren't relevant to you, or that you have to figure out if they are relevant to you. So signal to noise, deeper relationships, deeper, richer conversations. That's, I think, what I'm trying to sort of facilitate and encourage.
Okay. It sounds like it's something that definitely the listeners would be really interested in. So I'll throw a link to that into the show notes, Mark. But we're coming towards the end of the podcast. If people wanted to reach out to you, I know servicedesignshow.com is your main hub at the moment for all the podcasts and all the video podcasts as well. But is there other ways people can get in touch with you want to promote?
I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, so I'd love to connect if you're listening to this conversation and thinking, well, send me a note on LinkedIn. I'll reply to everyone. And there's one other sort of channel that might be interesting for the listeners, and that is Service Design Jobs, which you briefly mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
If you're looking for a service design position anywhere across the globe, Service Design Jobs is a platform where we try to scrape the internet and harvest all the available service design positions from companies across the world.
Absolutely. Into one place.
So have a look there.
It's really good. I was on that the other day, snooping around in preparation for this. So like, absolutely, servicedesignjobs.com. You're definitely the service design man. You've got everything going. Service Design Jobs, Service Design Show. Throw links all in the show notes.
We said at the start of the conversation that I'm trying to simplify my life and trying to bring it back to a few elements. But I think these are really the ones that I'm trying to focus on these days.
Nice. Mark, listen, look, thank you so much for giving me your time. As always, thanks for everything that you do for the service design community globally as well. So on behalf of everyone, thank you for all that effort.
Grateful for the invitation, Jerry. Thanks.
There you go, folks. I hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you enjoyed it and want to listen to more, why not visit thisishcd.com, where you can learn more about what we're up to and also explore our courses whilst you're there. Thanks again for listening.